coming in as Lube. Milledyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flame.
Here goes, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get this hour underway on a Tuesday, April 30th. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com on this Tuesday. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. What's going on, Vix?
Just having the time of my life, buddy.
Busy hour coming your way. We got Trent Cull, the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Get you set for round two. Wranglers Coachella Valley coming up a little bit later on this hour on Flames Talk. But on this Tuesday, Calder Trophy finalists have been announced by the NHL. And no Connor Zeri for the Calgary Flames. And honestly, I don't think that we are overly surprised by that. I do think he was one of the league's better rookies in the 23-24 season, but there were two no-doubters as the year went along. We knew that it was going to be Connor Bedard of the Blackhawks and Brock Faber of the Minnesota Wild. Those two were locked in as Calder Trophy finalists, and then there was just that question as to who the third player was going to be, Adam Fantilli or
Logan Cooley,
somebody else that could be in the mix. Connor Zeri was on the fringes of that conversation and ends up being New Jersey's Luke Hughes as the third Calder Trophy finalist when it's all said and done. So I don't think we're surprised by who the Calder Trophy finalists are. I don't think there's any injustice or slight with Zeri not being one of the finalists. You know, had it been a conversation and Connor Zeri's November, December, January type production carried on the rest of the way, maybe it would be a little bit more of a conversation. But in the end, the three guys that are there make a lot of sense. But I do think it just gives us an opportunity to dive in on Zeri's rookie season. We'll get to the Calder Trophy conversation a little bit later on here. But I think Zeri had himself a hell of a rookie season, Vix. Tied for 8th in rookie scoring with 34 points in 63 games. He was 0.54 when it comes to rookie points per game, which had him in the top 5 for NHL rookies, minimum 30 games. And you know what? That number came down as he hit those struggles after the injury. Remember, he had the injury, missed what, the 9 games, came back and just wasn't the same guy for a few weeks there, led to him being healthy scratched, and then he came back and played center the rest of the year. But he meant a great deal to the Flames this season. He was a very important player on this team, and you could really tell most what Connor Zeri meant to this team when he wasn't in the lineup. I felt like when he was gone for those 9 games, it was noticeable. And when he wasn't going or when he was having an off night, it was noticeable. That's how I look back and really underline just how important he was to this Flames team this year. That was a nice rookie year. And that was, I think, the best rookie. This isn't much of a hot take. The best rookie performance we've seen on the Flames since Matthew Tkachuk's rookie season in 2016-17.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair, and that's as much a detriment or a look at the team and what they've produced in terms of rookies since Matthew Tkachuk. But at the end of the day, Connor Zeri emerged from being a minor league prospect to a top 6 fixture on the Calgary Flames, and we don't need to get into a debate of, is the Kadri line the number one line? Is there another line that's a number one line? Connor Zeri came up alongside Martin Pospisil, but came up from the Wranglers and was immediately injected into his top 6 role, which he flourished in. And the year-over-year development in Connor Zeri has been incredible. Remember, he was a 4th liner at times in the AHL playoffs a year ago,
yeah,
and jumped to arguably a top line in the NHL and performed admirably. keep him. Like, how many times did we see, especially in, as you mentioned, November, December, January, did we see him either execute a highlight reel play or almost execute a highlight of the night type goal? And he's one of the higher skilled players on the Calgary Flames. And when you say that about a rookie who doesn't even have 70 NHL games under his belt, that is a tip of the cap to the development, both the work put in by the player, the work put in by the organization to get him ready for prime time.
This was Zary on Locker Cleanout Day, talked about being effective as a rookie, jumping in as a rookie, and getting the job done, and being so effective right from the get-go.
I think for me, I knew I could do it. Coming in here, you know, you make one play, you're like, okay, I can do this, and then you make a couple more, you're like, okay, I feel good about myself, and then you just build that throughout the whole first few shifts, first few games, and you feel good about yourself. You know, you get on the scoreboard early, you get a few points here and there, and you know what you can do. And I think I've had that confidence in my game. I know I can make plays. I don't think it changed. You know, you're paying against better players, but when you have the puck, you're the same player, and you try and draw guys in, try and move the puck, get to open spots. So I think the game of hockey as a whole, it gets faster, but in your head, you just got to stick to what you know you're good at. And I think for me, that was something I found I could play a similar way, you know, as I've always played. I think it's a tough league to score. It's a tough league to put up points. But I think when I can stick to my game and stick to what I do best, it comes a lot easier to me.
So what the heck now does Connor Zary do for a follow-up as a sophomore next year? He's going to have a good summer to train, as he mentioned on Locker Cleanout Day, with some of the long runs the Wranglers have had the last couple of seasons. He's been playing deep into the year. Obviously, you'd rather not have a long summer, but for him, he's going to have a long summer to train. Long summer to train, knowing what it takes to play an entire close to 82-game season in the NHL. He played 63 NHL games and also part of an AHL season. But you know, the thing that I wonder most, you always wonder about year two for a guy in the NHL. You always wonder about that sophomore slump or whatever the case may be. But for me, knowing that he is going to be 23 to start next season, he was an older rookie this year. And knowing that, I wonder if that helps him just from a physical standpoint. He's more mature physically. He's got more seasons of pro under his belt. This is his third full season playing pro. I just wonder if that helps him avoid that sophomore setback that we see so many times. I'm not suggesting that he goes from being 0.54 points per game to point per game or anything like that, but I just wonder if, because he's a little older, a little bit more mature, a little more physically mature, if that helps him mitigate that year two slump that we see sometimes.
Yeah, we can get into the numbers in a moment as to what's fair to expect out of Connor Zary next season, but I'm more interested in how he comes into camp from a preparedness level, from a conditioning perspective, the amount of work that he's able to put in over the course of the summer, because as you mentioned, he's going to have more of a summer to train, more drive, I would even think, having a taste of the NHL. And then knowing you have the opportunity to just get right back into a similar top six role in an NHL organization, I don't want to see any complacency out of Connor Zary. I don't want to see a situation where he feels like he'll be gifted a spot. I still want him to have that fire and that spark that rookies tend to play with, in the fact that, oh, this is the NHL, and oh, I can take somebody's job, and oh, now I'm going to say, I don't want to see any of the complacency set in. And I think that'll be the biggest thing in terms of the sophomore jinx, is coming in prepared physically, coming in prepared mentally, because now you know more of what to expect about out of the NHL grind. You get a sense of it in the AHL to a degree, but the NHL is an absolute different beast. We've heard so many different coaches say it's an everyday league, so you need that consistency. You need that level of preparedness in order to be at your best every night. I think the expectation should be high on Connor Zary again. He's a top six forward as a rookie, so it's fair to set the bar high. But in terms of points, I'm not so interested in what statistical numbers he can set. I want to know the mindset and the conditioning level that he comes in, because he has an absolute opportunity to be one of the biggest impact players on the Flames next year.
Okay, so with that being said, is Connor Zary a center or a winger for you? If you're making the decisions, is Connor Zary best used as a center iceman or a winger for next season?
for me and for next season, I would leave him back on the wing. I think that just puts him in the best position to succeed. And but in saying that, that means you have to go out and acquire a center, whether it's free agency, whether it's a trade, and we'll see what's available come July 1 or in the days leading up to free agency if there's something that they can do with the draft. But I think for now, I think he's better served playing the wing. I can see the situation and the temptation to move him down the middle. He is a natural center. He was drafted as a center, spent last season more on the wing with the Wranglers than he did down the middle.
Yep.
And is there a long-term picture that you can paint that has Connor Zary as an NHL center? Absolutely. But for me, for year two, I still, my preference would be on that left side, and my preference would be with Nazem Kadri.
See, I'm on the complete other side. I don't think, why wait? I don't like, he showed us, I mean, you could always move him back if it's clearly over his head, but you know, I've really been convinced by people over the last number of months about how the NHL is no longer a sheltering league. The NHL is a development league now.
Right.
And you have got to put guys in spots to develop. And if you see him as a center long term, then he should be playing as a center now to grow at the position. And I think the job that he did in, granted, I think it was seven games at the end of the season. I thought it was strong. He more than got the job done and looked like he belonged. Now, games didn't mean anything. He looked better against also-ran opposition as opposed to teams that were still playing for something. All that needs to be factored in. I just think this is a team that is starved for center depth. They're a team that needs to find guys internally who can eventually replace Michael Backlund and Nazem Kadri in the not-so-distant future. I mean, we're talking about 35-year-old Backlund and a guy who's turning 34 this summer in Kadri. Like,
right.
These guys are still very effective players. By no means do I think they're done being good players right now, but they also don't have a ton of high-leverage time left in the NHL either. So, at some point, internally, the Flames have got to find guys to take those spots. And while I don't see Zary as being that core number one center to truly build your organization around, I think he's got the chance of being one of your two centers going forward. So for me, I'm of the opinion that let him play there to start the year. And if it is so clear that he is over his head, you can always move him back to the wing. But knowing how important developing in this league is now, and knowing how important it is getting guys into spots at young ages, I think it's the place for him to be. And I go back to the other point, turns 23 in September, so he's not going to be a 19-year-old with next to no pro experience or only a season of pro experience under his belt being put in that spot. He's going to be a 23-year-old being put in that spot. And I liked what I saw from him and Huberdeau. I'd be really interested in seeing a Huberdeau Zary third line type, or, you know, kind of offensively slanted line to start next season.
See, for me in those seven games, I don't know how much to take out of it. And you laid out the reasons why. It was kind of garbage time. It was experiment time. And to be honest, going into next season, I'm not against experimenting with Connor Zary as a center. I think I would use training camp for that for the most part to see how he fares in those exhibition games, those tune-up games. And as you get closer and closer to the regular season, you start to see more and more NHL-type lineups from the other side. But I do think putting him on the wing is putting him in the best place to succeed in the short term. Now, it expands to a bigger conversation. If you look down the Calgary Flames pipeline and go, which one of these guys is guaranteed to be able to play center in the NHL? I don't think there's a plethora of them floating around. And maybe by necessity in that sense, that's why you want to give Connor Zary a longer look down the middle to see if, okay, is this a guy that we can use as a second line center and maybe have Kadri slot as your first and you leave Backlund, Coleman, and player X on left wing? And that gives you a little bit more organizational depth down the middle while buying yourself time to see what Connor Zary is as a center iceman. But for me, I just think that I liked what I saw most on the left side versus what I saw down the middle. And I think that on a team that's going to be, I don't want to say devoid of scoring punch, but we've talked about the Calgary Flames aren't going to stack up every night and outskill the other opponent. He's one of your skill players. And if you can put him with another skilled player in Nazem Kadri and have that duo feed off each other, I personally think from a team perspective and from an individual perspective, that's where I see Connor Zeri slotting the most.
Yeah, and I see, like, if you were to put together a line of Zeri, Sharon Govich, and Huberto, I don't even think that that means that Zeri takes a huge step back offensively playing down the middle. I think that,
I mean, that's still some heavy lifting to do depending on how free you want Sharon Govich to be. You're asking Connor Zeri to focus more on the 200-foot areas of his game.
I'm giving them a lot of offensive starts. I'm giving them a lot of high ground. I'm kind of using them as a third line. If I'm Kadri's going to be my number one line next year.
Right.
Backlund's going to be my defensive shutdown line next year. And then I free up Zeri, Huberto, and Sharon Govich is a line that can go out there and generate offensively. That's honestly how I'd be looking at it, is really allowing Huberto and Sharon Govich, who have a nice chemistry, and Zeri and Huberto, who I thought built something in the back part of the season, just let them go out and play to their strengths. I mean, I don't think Zeri is poor defensively by any means, but I think right now his offense is the biggest asset that he brings to the Flames. Huberto and Sharon Govich, I think their biggest asset is their offense. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, put them in a 5-on-5 spot. Sharon Govich can still be on your penalty kill and be an important kind of number two forward pair guy on the penalty kill. But let those guys go out there and play against other teams' third lines. Give them lots of offensive starts. You need to get Huberto more than 52 points. I think that's something that's really intriguing for next season.
I mean, not to make your point for you, because I'm still not on your side on this, but the way you've articulated that and laying out the lines with Kadri, Kuzmenko, Pospisil, you've got Zeri, Huberto, Sharon Govich, Backlund, Coleman, and one of Mangiapane, Coronado, or Pelletier, or whoever wants to seize that third spot on the Backlund-Coleman line, suddenly your 1-2-3 slots really nicely. So I will give you that. I will tip my cap to you in terms of the slotting on how you've built the Calgary Flames top three lines. But for me, I think from a point production perspective, which I think is probably, in my mind, prudent or number one in terms of the contribution Connor Zeri is going to give me, I still want him on that left side.
Yeah, I just don't understand what you're waiting for. He's 23 years old. At some point, you can't wait forever to move him into the middle.
Do you see him as like a 10 or 15 year NHL center, and they're just starting him out on the left side? Because for me, I think I just see him as a left winger, short term and long. And we don't have the sample size to look at it at the NHL level, but we did see at the AHL level that he was moved from down the middle to the left side as well.
They just have nobody at center.
I would
much rather
Macklin Celebrini.
I would much rather have Zeri down the middle than going and signing somebody to a 4-year deal to try to be your number three center. There's so much more value in my eyes of allowing a guy to grow at the position, the most important position in the sport outside of goaltending in my eyes. And the position in your organization where you are the thinnest going forward. Who in the organization right now translates to being a top two center long term? Right now, on April 30th, is there anybody outside of Zeri that you could say that about?
No.
And that's why I think it's so worthy to give him that try, as opposed to go to chase a 29-year-old in free agency.
But then from an organizational standpoint, shouldn't Craig Conroy be shopping for a center? Because if any one of your top three centers goes down, who's behind those three or those four guys if we're going to bring Kevin Rooney into the conversation one of those roles?
That doesn't matter so much to me. It's not so much about the results as much as giving Zeri a chance to be... Like, this is... I'm doing this for like a 4-5 year... view, not just of this season view, right? Like, I'm like, hey, Zeri, if Zeri's going to be a center on this team long-term, you might as well start to see if it works now as opposed to waiting is kind of why I'm
on the other side
of the conversation.
These would be the years to experiment with that. And again, as I mentioned,
see him as a center.
I don't know if I see him. And again, we've only got a 7-game sample size at the tail end of a season that is a time where I don't know how much of that you can use as an evaluation tool, but I personally see him longer term as a winger than I do a center. But I will grant you this, the time to find out whether or not that's true is this season.
Let's read a few texts, 960-960. This from the Beav, who says, Zeri's numbers will come down next year due to him being moved to center. He'll be one of the three as the Flames rock three number two lines probably next year. See him in between Huberdeau and Sharon Govich. Kadri line stays intact. Maybe see them try to move on from Mangiapane, and Coronado fits in with Coleman and Backlund. This reads, if the Flames can find a true number one center, and if Zeri can develop into a solid two, then having Kadri and Backlund as your 3-4 down the road, you've got some good center depth. And this from Dylan. Connor's already shown he is the biggest factor needed to be a center. High-level hockey IQ. I honestly think he's already one of the smartest forwards on the team, even when he was on the wing. I shudder to say, but I agree with Pat, put him in a position to continue to show what he's already shown, but get even better. And finally, that's from Dylan. I don't think it's that much of a shudder to agree with me. And finally, Derek and Cochrane says, is Hanzek not ideally going to turn into a second or third line center, or were we not, are we not hopeful on him? See, he was drafted as a winger. Zeri was drafted as a center.
And the thought was the Vancouver Giants were going to try Hanzek down the middle more this past season. I don't have the splits as to how much time he spent down the middle or down the left wing. So that's sort of left to be seen, but yes, he was drafted as a winger.
Who's going to win? Not who's going to win. If you, neither of us have a vote on this thing. If you were voting for the Calder Trophy, who would get your number one vote?
See, I want to automatically say Connor Bedard, but 61 points in 68 games, and I know he had the broken jaw and all that. That doesn't wow me so much as a rookie defenseman coming in and playing second shy of 25 minutes a night and a top pair on a team that's much more competitive facing the opposition's top forwards night in, night out. So my heart wants to lean Faber, but I also understand that there's going to be some perception of the vote going a teenager versus a defenseman that's a little bit more seasoned. He's got more, I mean, they're both rookies at the end of the day, but one's clearly older than the
one's
other.
One's 21, the other's 18. Yep.
So I'm not going to be upset if Connor Bedard gets it, but for me, I think I would lean Brock Faber.
You know, I changed my opinion on this one. About a month or so ago, I made a really strong point agreeing with you that I think it should be Faber. But I've gone and really dug in on this one because I find it so interesting. If you go take a look at the splits of Connor Bedard on the ice for Chicago and Connor Bedard off the ice for Chicago, they go from being an NHL team to being like an ECHL team. It is.
I'll believe you.
It is the with or without you numbers of Bedard on or off the ice for Chicago are staggering. I haven't seen anything quite like them in my recollection of just how
he didn't have a lot to play with.
And how respectable they were with this 18-year-old on the ice and how completely off the board they were in a bad way without him on the ice. You know, we're talking about an 18-year-old who almost was point per game on one of the worst teams we've seen in quite some time. I mean, they're not San Jose bad this year, but that was a really bad Chicago team. Did not have much to play with all year long.
They had, including Bedard, they had two players north of 38 points this season. So maybe I'm being too harsh in judging Connor Bedard's point per game-ish play.
Yeah, 61 and 68, and then the next leading scorer was
Kurashev, 54 and 75, points. And then Nick Foligno with 37 and 74.
Yeah.
So not a lot to work with there. I know the Taylor Hall thing they had hoped would work, and obviously the injury didn't allow for that, but there is not a lot there. There's not a lot there.
I think I go Bedard. His shot volume, there's just, when there's not much else to play with, it's difficult to put up big time numbers like that. I don't know. It's close.
Would your opinion change if Faber was also a teenager?
Maybe. Yep.
Because age doesn't come into it, but age comes into it.
McDavid in his rookie year was 48 points in 45 games. And McKinnon in his rookie year, was 63 points in 82 games. So Bedard was close to McDavid, more productive than MacKinnon as a rookie. McDavid didn't win Rookie of the Year because of the injury. MacKinnon did win the Calder Trophy in 2014. So interesting. Those are kind of the, in my eyes, the last three kind of no question generational number ones: MacKinnon, then McDavid, and now Bedard. So that's why I use those three as comparables. He is Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. I'm really curious to see how the voters go, though. Is it Bedard or is it Faber when it's all said and done? Now, this hour of Flames Talk from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Cracked foundation, Boeing foundation walls. They have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you this hour on the program as we continue along on a Tuesday. And the Calgary Wranglers continue their 2024 Calder Cup playoffs. It's time to go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. This hockey season, support local. Find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer today. And we say hello, as we do every week, to the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, Trent Cull, back home safe and sound in Calgary after an arduous Monday of travel. And it was. It's not an easy place to get back from. Coming back from Tucson, where the Wranglers took a 2-0 series win over the Roadrunners in a best of three first round matchup. Trent joins us now inside hockey. Hello, Mr. Cull. Congratulations. How are we doing?
Doing well, thank you. Yeah, no, excited to be back, even though there's snow here as opposed to...
It's almost gone. It's almost gone.
Tucson, but, yeah, that's it. White sand is what I'm saying, so that's good. But that's good hockey weather, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, I've had enough of the hockey weather, though. Yes. I'm with you. More Tucson, less this. I'm with you. I'm with you in that respect. Has to be nice to know you're coming home with some home playoff dates. You didn't get a home playoff date in round one based on the nature of the best of three, but you're going to get two guaranteed home dates here against Coachella Valley starting on Friday in round two. Just that has to be a nice feeling for you and the group, Coach.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think it's just that to go and, you know, I was proud of the guys, and they should be proud too, just because, I mean, it's not easy. It's not very often does a 7 seed beats 2 seed in pro hockey, you know. So I was, for us to be able to convert that and then get ourselves into the second round and then to get some home dates, like you say, it's awesome. I'm looking forward to having my first playoff game in Calgary.
So, Coach, how do you, now that you've had some time to reflect, you go back to last week, a Wednesday shutout win and then a one-goal Friday win. Both of them were essentially one-goal games. How do you evaluate the two games? Tell us your synopsis of a Game 1 and Game 2 victory over Tucson.
Well, I mean, they were good games. That's first and foremost, as a coach, you're excited to be, you know, part of it. And then to see the players, you know, like tested and having to go through, it was challenging hockey, right? And that's the great thing about it is the playoffs of getting our guys in there and young guys or new guys having those games and having a chance to play it. Like, it's fun, you know, but it's a real challenge, right? So, and of course, you know what, our first night, I thought we were kind of all pretty good. And our goaltender was pretty darn good too. And he made some big saves for us. And then the second night, you know, maybe not as clean as a game for us, but we hung in there. We got some real timely goals, and a bunch of different guys kind of stepped up for us that night, which was great.
Trent, a lot of I can't even begin to count how many times I asked you throughout the regular season about the adversity and some of the hiccups and hurdles your group had to deal with. And one of the things that we talked about a few times was, you know, being battle tested and how that might end up helping you in the playoffs. How much do you think your group being as battle tested as they were through the regular season shone through once you were playing Tucson?
You know what, too? I think it came right down to the wire for us. I mean, we didn't play great in our last four games versus Abbotsford, and they were on it, and they were pretty sharp, and it kind of was a good tune-up for us. Like, we had to get our game better, and I think that was kind of a reality for us, and it helped us playing those guys, and those guys playing that strong, and then also, too, from us, you know, as we talked about, when you add a point of game guy like Coronado, and you add Dustin Wolf, who comes in. I mean, it just, you know, those are the those are big pieces for us, for us to actually be able to, I think, compete and create some offense.
Coach, you referenced Dustin Wolf a couple of times. What kind of game changer is getting him back? 966 save percentage over the course of those two games, a 1.50 goals against average. How does he change the complexion of a matchup?
Well, I mean, I think Dustin has played well this year, but that first game, like, that's the best I've seen Dustin Wolf. I mean, he was it's awesome to see these guys, young guys, be able to pick up their game and to be able to play at, like, when it really counts, when it's for keeps, you know what I mean? And so he was the prime candidate the first night. He really stepped up for our group. I thought was just outstanding for us, and he's that backbone. That's what every good playoff team needs. You know, you need a goaltender to kind of just make a couple big saves for you to calm your group down and then kind of know that it's going to be okay.
Is it the same old Dustin Wolf in your eyes, or do you notice something different in him coming off that last NHL stint?
Yeah, no, you know what? I just thought he just looked really determined. You feel it off him. You know, we're talking to the airport the day before, we're traveling down there. You know, he just seemed to be, you know, all the times he's dialed in, but he just seemed to be at another level for me, and that was awesome. And of course, you know, he's got something to prove, and he wants to show everybody he's still the best goalie in the league, and he certainly played like that.
And Coach, you referenced Matt Coronado, one goal, one assist in the two-game series, a +2 rating. How does he change the look of your offense coming back into the lineup for this playoff series?
He has swagger, savvy, or whatever it is with the puck, and it's kind of what we've been missing. You know, we've been a challenged offensive group. We know that through all the call-ups and things that have had throughout the year, and when we had Matt, he was always a point-of-game guy, so he's kind of like a go-to guy we knew we could rely on kind of night in and night out, even as a young guy, and when he comes back and he has that composure with the puck, and all of a sudden then he can make some plays that helps the guys around him, and then, you know, creates a little more ozone time for us. And I think that's him and Pelche have been good. And I really like Schwinney's game, both games, actually. I thought Cole Schwinn played really well, too.
We're chatting with Trent Cole, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. They're getting set for a best-of-5 second-round series now in the Calder Cup playoffs against Coachella Valley. We'll get to the opposition here in a little bit. But, you know, in talking to a couple of people about the two games and even having an opportunity to watch game one from afar, Coach, I'm curious as to getting some NHL time in at the end of the year for a couple of big parts of your team, Solovyov, Klapka, they come back, and both players seem like such impact makers in these first two games. They've been impact makers for you all year long, but did you, as Aaron just asked you, did you notice a little extra swagger, a little extra confidence from those two guys coming back to your group?
You know what? I think that's certainly possible, but like I know in the past it can go either way. Mm-hmm. You got guys who go to the NHL and then come back and aren't as dialed in or aren't as sharp, I think with those four specifically coming back, like, and we've said this and you've heard me probably say this before, like, they stayed in touch, they've come to games, they've been around it, and they're still linked to the group, you know, and they're good teammates. And I know that those guys, like, they see this as an opportunity for them to be, you know, there might have been other years that these guys have played where they weren't maybe the difference makers, or, you know, but they're difference makers for us here. And I know our guys that have been here know that they were really excited to see them walk through the door. And I think it's just that all of a sudden it's like, oh man, this is awesome. Now these guys are here, like, you know, we're going to get back to how we were, you know. And so I think that was the thing the team had, the effect on the team. And also those guys, I think they personally have come back. And like you said, whether it's whether it's the extra swagger, whether it's the extra confidence, whatever it is, but they've all been really big parts of us winning those two games.
Trent, it's not like Ilya Solovyov specifically, you don't count on him for offense, but that's not maybe necessarily the biggest part of his game. And, you know, you see him out there blocking shots and a huge role on your penalty kill, a huge shutdown role. But when he scores a goal on top of all that, like he did in game two, what kind of boost can that do, or what kind of boost can that be for the group?
Well, I tell you what, that goal specifically at that time was immense. I mean, we just got scored on 4-on-4, you know, it wasn't a great read by us. And all of a sudden, you know, we switch it up and different guys go out, and those guys go out and have a great shift. And then all of a sudden you find that, like, go down there and Solo's the guy who goes down, looks like he does it all the time. You know, it was perfect, you know, and it was such a huge answer back for us at that point in the second period. And so you're right. That's not his game, but it's also a guy who's been shooting for sticks better in the O zone. He's been finding his way a little bit with sometimes our F3 plays and stuff. So I think that he's been finding a way to be more productive for our group with some of the things that we've been kind of, some of the disciplines or some of the structure that we've had in place with our O zone.
And the winning goal, it ends up being the winner, is that gorgeous goal from William Stromgren. You've worked with him all year long, but Trent, like, would Stromgren have had the confidence or the mindset be able to score that goal, you know, 3-4 months ago? Is that something that he would have had the confidence to do then? Or did the growth that he's shown allow him to be able to step up and make a game-changing play like that?
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. I think you're right. Like, with ice time comes confidence, and, you know, with confidence to the ice time, and it's amazing. It's one of those chicken and egg things. You know, a coach is always wanting a player to do things better, and then you'll get more ice time, and that's kind of the talk back and forth. But with all the opportunities you guys were talking about before with other players being called up, you know, someone's had to fill in. And, you know, I think Stromer had a run. I think he had 10 points in his last 11 games or something along those lines. And so he had a really good run for us, that a guy who's progressed along and gotten better and, you know, just showing good signs of a young prospect. So it was nice to see him go. And, you know, how his game was going, there's going to be ups and downs, but to be able to have the confidence to make that play, you know, it kind of excites us to see where we got with him as we move along.
We're chatting with Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Okay, now it's Coachella Valley. You start with two games on home ice Friday night and Sunday afternoon, both games at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Game three and then 4 and 5, if necessary, would be played in Palm Springs. Coach, how do you saw the season series. You obviously know how good a team you're going to be up against here as the number one seed in the Pacific. But tell us about the season series between your group and Coachella Valley and kind of what you learned about how tight your group is with this Firebirds team.
Yeah, well, they're a good hockey team. I mean, that's something we felt about Tucson. It's a good hockey team. Finishes in second overall in our division. Our division's not an easy division. So now you've got the league, not the league best, but, you know, the conference best, you know, on this side. And we know that they're a pretty darn good team. They're pretty deep, and they've got good young prospects as well. So it's going to be a great challenge for us. I mean, for us, I think it'll be exciting for me to see our group and how we are at home, you know, just because it's always a little bit different at home. Sometimes you add pressure on. Sometimes we play better because you get the home crowd. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects our group. And you know what, for us, though, like, it shouldn't be something where I think we're feeling pressure. I mean, we're completely the underdog. There's no doubt we're the bottom seed. They're the top. And so we got to find a way to kind of hang around. And they can be a real powerhouse team. And we're just going to have to try to, you know, hopefully be as ugly and as slow and as kind of a game can be. Because, you know, this is a team that has a lot of weapons. And we're going to try to neutralize those as much as we can.
How much did your group, you mentioned the U word, how much did your group embrace being the underdog in round one, and how much will they do so again here against Coachella Valley?
Yeah, well, you know what? We didn't talk about it a lot. Like, it's not like we We kind of had a recipe. We thought, hey, if we do these things, this team does these things well, this is what we want to do to kind of counteract that. And you know, we go out, play our best, and we'll see where we're at, you know. And that's what I said to them after. I was really proud of them because it's not easy. It's not, like I said, like you don't see 7-2, right? And so that's why I was so proud of them and kind of blown away with how they played. And I thought, you know, it was awesome to be in that situation and find a way, you know. And now we're going to have to do it again. And, you know, and not to say Tucson was a good team, but now it's going to be even a better opponent with the top place team. So, but you know what? I think that we'll just go and try to get our business done the way we go about it, and then we'll see where we're at from there.
And final question for you, Coach. You know, the Firebirds get the opportunity to choose either getting the first two games at home or the last three games at home. You get the two guaranteed home games. What can that do for a group? What potential advantage could that give your team, Coach, with the first two games of this series at the Saddle Dome?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. We'll see, right? That's the part. Yeah. I haven't been there. I haven't done it. I haven't seen it, you know, and there's some guys in the team who have not either. I mean, obviously, there's some guys who played in the playoffs last year. So I think it's awesome. I was pretty jacked up to see them put the W in the ice. Like, that's awesome, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like you get to take over the Dome for a weekend anyways, right? So that's pretty cool. And I don't know. I think the guys are going to love it, you know, to have a good group of fans that have a good turnout. I think that would be awesome. And what happens from one game to the next, we don't know. Coach Hill hasn't played a playoff game yet. We've had a couple games, you know. But you know what? I think it's just if we just focus more on what we're doing and it's going to be a process, right? Nothing's going to be easy for us. And I'm not worried about where we're playing, what we're doing. I'm just worried about my team. And hopefully we can get off to a good start and kind of go from there.
Coach, how do you feel about the rest versus rust argument when you're looking at Coachella Valley? Are they better served with the time off and time will tell? Or do you think you can take advantage of them not having played a game in a while?
Yeah, I think time will tell. But I honestly think that, you know, they're a good hockey team. They've got a couple, maybe if they got some bumps and bruises, they've had, you know, almost 2 weeks here now to rest it up, right? So I think we're gonna see the lion of the team that they are. It's not, and this is also too, this is a team that lost in Game 7 in overtime of the American Hockey League last year. So
yep.
This is not a team who's a stranger to the playoffs. This is not a team that's, you know, had time, or they've been used to every situation already probably, right? So I don't think that, you know, we're going to have to be at our best. I mean, this is it's a huge challenge, and it's awesome. I think it's great for our players to be playing this meaningful hockey at this time of the year, right? And, you know, HL playoffs is as good as it can get if you're not in the National Hockey League playoffs. So I'm excited. I can't wait for our group, and I can't wait to get home and like play games in the Dome.
And, Trent, maybe without tipping your hand too much, what do you have to execute on your side to ensure that Coachella Valley, obviously the at least in the regular season, the toast of the conference, what do you have to do on your end to make sure that they can't get going and getting to their game?
Yeah, well, no, I'm not going to get right into it. There's some things that I've been working on here for the last few days. But, I mean, obviously, you could just go simply and just say, like, special teams, right? Like, this is a – we took three penalties, minor penalties in the first game against Tucson, and that's not probably the right recipe, I would say. So things like that. This is a team that's got some high-end firepower, and you don't want to put them on the power play three times in a row in any period, that's for sure. So just some quiet things like that. We want to be disciplined, and we want to make sure we're working hard and doing, challenging ourselves and being difficult to play against. But also, we don't want to, you know, lose a game on special teams either.
So you are back on the practice ice Wednesday, right? You go Wednesday, Thursday, and then puck drop 7 o'clock on Friday. What? And again, just take us through what's going to be important in these final preparations before game one.
Yeah, just making sure, I guess I'll start again with special teams, making sure our guys know what's going on, what the plan is, who we're seeing. Same thing 5-on-5. I'm not a guy who goes crazy with video to try to load guys down. It's more, hey, what you're going to see, this is what they've done well. You've seen it all year. This is what we want to do, A, B, and C. And you know what? And make sure our work and compete and the stuff that we've talked about and how we check is those are the things that it ends up boiling down to as well, right? So, but I think that's what we're going to have for the next 2 days. And then we'll be excited to play that game on Friday for sure.
Coach, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome having some playoff hockey at the Dome starting Friday. So it's Friday at 7 o'clock and then Sunday afternoon for the Wranglers and Coachella Valley Firebirds for round two of the Calder Cup playoffs. Always appreciate the time, Coach. Really do. And good luck in game one on Friday. We'll be watching. Thank you so much, as always, for the time.
Yeah, perfect, boys. Well, thanks for having me. I love that we keep getting to do this, so.
Yeah, we're cool to keep doing it for the next weeks, next month, however long it takes. We'd be all for that on our end. I would imagine you would be too.
Let's keep doing it so we can get this snow off the ground and then we can have some sunny conversation.
I'm down with that. I'm down with that. Good luck Friday. Thank you, Coach.
All right, thanks, boys. Take care.
That is Trent Cole, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Wranglers open up. Tickets available. Ticketmaster right now for game one against Coachella Valley, the number one seed in the Western Conference. Wranglers have already pulled off the one upset. We know they're a better team than a number seven seed in the Pacific Division. They had so many injuries. The Flames had so many injuries. There was so much roster turnover on both teams, and even more so on Trent's Wranglers team. When they're assembled, they're a much better team than a seven seed. So I think the points gap, which I think is in excess of about 30 points in the regular season from Coachella Valley to the Wranglers.
103-79.
So what's that, 24 points?
Yes.
So that gap, significant, but I think it's the actual gap between the teams when they're both assembled, a whole lot less than that. So we'll see how it goes. Friday, Sunday, guaranteed home games at the Dome for the Wranglers. Tickets available at Ticketmaster. Go check it out. Let's go support the Wranglers and enjoy some playoff hockey live this spring at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. That'll wrap us up inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local Calgary, from best from the West, Canadian produce to quality only Alberta meats. Find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in store today. As we start to wrap up this hour on Flames Talk, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Happy birthday to Shan. He's turning 23 today. One of our producers, Cam Hughes. Happy birthday whenever you turn 23 as well, Cam. Those are our producers this hour. That'll wrap us up on this hour of Flames Talk. It's been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.